You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here it is on a Thursday evening with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And we have some late-breaking news. Not necessarily just for gamers, but for all Australians. Marriage equality just passed the lower house of Parliament.
Awesome.
And could be enacted by the Governor-General as early as tomorrow. So, hooray for that.
Correct. Let's love everybody. Everyone should love everybody. 8th of January is the date where apparently same-sex couples could start to become married.
Yeah, because they've got to apply for a license and it takes a month and paperwork. It's always about the paperwork,
damn,
isn't
bureaucracy.
It?
Especially like this time of year.
Just like games, I guess. You've got to get through that paperwork before you actually get to the game. Mm-hmm. We've got some paperwork here tonight in episode 193. On the 6th of December, 2017.
That would be the 7th of December.
I hate it when I type this up when I do my preparation the night before. Anyway, as usual, I am Mark.
Yes, you are. I'm Garth. And who is this?
Konnichiwa.
He's back.
Yes, I am Leon. I am back from my tour of Japan.
Yes.
Much fun was had by myself.
Well, we will hear about that,
yes.
I hope.
Yes, you shall.
So on tonight's show, we are going to betray each other.
Shocking.
In our what we've been playing this week, or at least what we've been playing lately. Leon, you are going to regale us with stories far and wide and big and tall about your recent trip to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark, you have a Christmas gift guide.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's going to be exciting. We also have to just do a little bit of a shout-out for our competition before we wrap that up in a week or so's time, which is the Campaigner Magazine competition. And time permitting, Mark, you want us to do a little Dice Man Secret Santa conversation, is that right?
Yeah, well, I thought going along with the Christmas gift guide, I'd spring it on you guys and give you basically the show minus all the time we're talking.
Okay.
To think about if we had to buy each other a Secret Santa game,
yep,
what we would buy. See how well we know each other. See how much we hate each other.
All right, so I've got to come up with a game for Mark and Leon. Leon, you've got to come up with a game for Mark and I, and Mark's got to come up with a game for Leon and I.
But we will ramble on so much during our betrayal talk, we probably won't get to that anymore.
Probably. But get prepared, guys, because we don't want to have any dead air. That's for sure. Now, first of all, thanks, Area 52, for sponsoring this week.
Oh, talking about Christmas gifts, that's your place to go.
Indeed, 104 Elizabeth Street. But we don't have much time. Let's get to a song, Mark.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and talk about all kinds of betrayal. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
That was the Beastie Boys with Sabotage here on Edge
Radio. Sabotage, because you like to paint.
Yes, anyway. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh this week, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. It's coming up to Christmas. Go in there, just grab a handful of stuff. Everyone in the family will like it, I guarantee.
Pay for it, preferably.
I suppose if you have to pay for it, that's fine.
Yes. Don't think you can pay with Bitcoin yet.
I did actually just see that there were...
no one can.
They just released Funko Pops.
Oh, God.
For Riverdale.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that definitely necessary.
And my partner calls that brain gravy. I just call it, it's the same colour as gravy. It's what I think it is.
All right. Well, there's no show after hours tonight, so maybe, Mark, you can do your own dedicated 1 hour of Funko Pop appreciation, perhaps. All right, let's get back to what we know best.
What we've been playing.
Exactly right. And before we get started on a little bit of a conversation about betrayal at Baldur's Gate,
ooh,
we need to start by saying thanks to Let's Play Games Distribution.
Yeah.
Which are apparently, according to their own website, Australia's premier board gaming distribution people, and they were kind enough to send us a copy of Betrayal at Baldur's Gate. So without them, we wouldn't be able to talk about this, and you'd have to listen to nothing for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
which is not necessarily a better alternative.
Well, we will see. So what is Betrayal at Baldur's Gate? Well, first of all, and most importantly, it is a re-implementation of Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Yes.
Now, this game has been around for a long, old time, designed by a plethora of people, but probably most well-known would be Rob Daviau.
Yeah, he was really sort of Hasbro's big in-house designer.
Correct. Now, this one, Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, is not designed by him. It is designed by Chris Dupuis and Mike Merles. Now, those names aren't necessarily big board game designer names as much as we know them, but the curious thing is, with the recent announcement by Rob of Betrayal at the House on Some Hill Legacy, he's actually doing that in partnership with Chris Dupuis, which is the designer of the Baldur's Gate.
There you go.
So there you go. No doubt we will talk about the legacy version of Betrayal in a little while. But anyway, now, it's all about Baldur's Gate. So what is it? Well, the Shadow of Baal has come over Baldur's Gate. Basically, you're all going to be playing your standard D&D-style tropes. You'll have a wizard, or you'll have a dwarf, or you'll have a paladin, or you'll have something else.
And the reason that they're tropes is because Baldur's Gate is actually a D&D
correct
thing. So it's kind of tropes because they invented the tropes.
Indeed.
So they can do what they please.
Well, I was going to ask you, Garth, do you know where Baldur's Gate is?
It is in Winterfell.
No.
Okay. Neverwinter, perhaps?
Neverwinterfell?
No, south of there. It's on the Sword Coast.
Yep.
On the world of Faerun,
yep,
in the world called the Forgotten Realms.
Well, I did try to Google Map it, didn't come up, so sorry, I plead ignorance.
These realms can't be that forgotten, because bloody everything in Dungeons & Dragons is bloody in it.
But yeah, it's in the Forgotten Realms, which is that, you know, the most well-known setting for D&D.
That just doesn't make sense. I think the most well-known setting is Forgotten?
Yeah. That's what it was called, you know. And so it's the setting for all the Drizzt novels. It's the setting for the D&D game, a lot of the D&D game. I've read a heap of novels in the Forgotten Realms. And, of course, it's the setting for the computer game Baldur's Gate.
Yes, I was going to say it must have been the setting of Baldur's Gate, the video game, because there's Baldur's Gate, the board game. But anyway, enough about that. Yes, 3 to 6 adventurers will be partying together for the better part of an hour until something will happen where you won't quite be partying for an hour because one of you is going to be, dun-dun-dun, a betrayer.
Most likely.
Most likely, but maybe not, depending on the scenario and the circumstances that arise therein. Mm-hmm. Now, this game is incredibly simple. It is even more simple for anyone who has played the original version where you go on a house and it's a hill and it's haunted.
Yeah, there's pretty much not much difference in the rules at all, but the rules that are different are the first page you open of the rule book for Betrayal at Baldur's Gate. I actually said before I opened it, wouldn't it be brilliant if on the first page it just says, if you've played the other one, here are the differences, and bam, that's exactly what it is.
Wow. Page one, is brilliant.
So when I taught this game at PAX, after I'd unwrapped it with a bunch of friends, all I read was 2 paragraphs in the opening page, and that was it.
Yep.
That's all I needed, because I thought, yep, I know that, and I know the other game back to front. It's all I need to know, because the rules are nonsense anyway, so it's fine.
Exactly right. And really, I guess one of the main major differences is that all of the characters have a unique ability.
Yes.
So, because you're playing these tropes, your wizard might be very wizardy with lightning coming out of his fingers, and the paladin might be a bit more health or good related, and the wizard might, sorry, the I don't know, the warrior
the
might
just go smash
a little
bit more for attack
and all that kind of stuff. But that is one of the major differences. The second one relates to the omens, which we'll get to when we talk about it. So what is this game for those of us who have not played either version of it? It is a cooperative tile placement game where, in essence, you are trying to just explore and very much kill time until something will happen.
Which is a kind of hard concept to talk to people about. Because when we played this, we played it with our friend Carl, and he said, so what am I doing? What are we doing? And I said, basically, mate, one of us is going to screw over the rest of us in about an hour. Until then, just kind of walk about.
Just
grab as much stuff as you can. And he's like, what? That's not a thing you do.
And for true, I guess, particularly Euro-style gamers, this is an issue, is that you say, what am I doing for the next hour? And it is, you're taking a stroll through Baldur's Gate. You're going to be walking through 3 stacks of tiles, potentially, because, again, there's one of the differences, is there are differences in the tiles. You've got buildings, you've got the alleyways or the roadways, and then you've got the catacombs, and they are in 3 distinct tile stacks. You will easily be able to tell when you're about to run out of building tiles or catacomb or whatever. The game compensates for this. But what it allows you to do is basically every single time you play this, you're going to be creating a slightly different version of Baldur's Gate. You're always going to start in this same 3-tile large opening room. It is, not surprisingly, the pub. And then depending on where you go, you're going to start placing random tiles. Now, I say random, but it is limited to the colour of the door you walk through. Because if you walk through a red door, you're going to be walking into another room of the building, and that might be the library, or it might be the kitchen, or it might be some other standard room.
It is just one of those handy hints that they've put for this edition that they thought, how can we just make things a little bit easier for everybody else? Why they decided to do that for some of these things and not others, we don't know.
Not quite.
But there's one thing that they did, which is like, yes, that makes sense. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So you'll be walking through the red door and reveal another room tile. You'll then continue on to that. And basically, every time you reveal a tile, you have to stop. Now, the tiles will have either an ability or an effect or a something on them, or they might not have anything. But every time you reveal that tile, you've got to stop, read the text on it, and it might just say, the first character to reveal this tile draws an item card, because there are three different types of cards in this game. There are items, there are omens, and there are events. Mm-hmm. Now, items, pretty simply, you draw one. It tells you what you've found. It tells you generally whether or not it can be stolen. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it tells you what its ability is. So you keep that in front of you. If you reveal an event, you reveal the event card and you do what it says, which will usually result in a rolling of the dice. We'll get to that. And then you've got the omen cards. Now, the omen cards are fewer and further between, because they will also be the cards that ultimately lead to the very not originally titled haunt. Because the haunt is exactly the same as the haunt in the Betrayal on the House on the Hill version, right down to the fact that they haven't bothered to change the name of it.
Yes, almost, since this is a fantasy setting, you'd think that maybe they'd change it to something else, like, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
The quest.
The quest.
The adventure.
The cataclysm.
It could be a thousand other things.
But calling it the haunt is very, very lazy.
And look, this is one thing I think that I'm going to probably say a number of times is, to me, that's just laziness, because it doesn't fit at all with the theme. I don't even know that, the omens, the items, the omens, and what were the other
the
things?
Events.
They're exactly the same three names and even exactly the same three symbols as the first game.
Yeah, the cards just have a slightly different hue to them on the back.
And even the fact that originally when you were searching a haunted house, that made sense. You've wandered into a haunted house. What are you going to do? You're going to look around the house. That makes sense. And you had the main level, the upper level, and the lower level in the house. So you had three stacks. Why did they have to make it three?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they have to keep the symbols? Why couldn't they call it something else? So I like they've cleaned up a lot of the rules in this, but to me it's just pure laziness, and maybe it helps with the familiarity for people who've played the other game before, but for people who are just picking up this game based on, I love D&D, I love Forgotten Realms, oh, here's an awesome game that plays quite quickly, they would be scratching their heads going, why the hell is this called The Haunt?
Yeah, you could have easily changed it to something else, and then people that have played the previous game straight away would have gone, oh, okay, so these are the new Haunt type cards. Correct. Okay, cool. And then that would have been fine. You would have been completely moved
on
from there.
Not that
so laziness.
No.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, this gets us to a little bit of a change, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Leon, but in the original house, you would always roll six dice, is that right? To be able to sort of enact the haunt?
I believe, you roll, I believe it was six dice. I probably got that completely wrong now. But I believe it was six dice, and then whatever level the haunt roll was at, you had to roll higher than that to trigger it starting.
Sure. So the difference with this one is, every time an omen card is revealed, you will roll a number of dice equal to the already revealed omen cards.
And if it's higher than six, then it kicks in.
Now, the thing is, the dice that you roll, which are D6s, have 0, 1, or 2 pips.
Yep.
So the first two haunts are just,
it's impossible.
There's no point rolling dice.
It can't be done. Whereas in the previous one, you could theoretically roll all six dice and it could happen straight away.
And again, this came through when we were playing one of the times with Carl, is that he was the first player to reveal a tile that had an omen symbol on it. He read the omen card, and every single omen card says at the bottom of it, roll for the haunt.
Yep.
And Leon basically said, no, don't worry about it, Carl, just don't do it. And he went, huh, what? It says what I have to do on the card.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, well, you can roll it if you want to, but there's no chance that you're going to be getting
six pips on
here.
The maximum you can get is two, that's right.
So, again, just a little bit silly, I think, in that regard. But anyway.
I get it, unless it could have had in little writing saying, unless this is only the whatever review, but I guess that takes time.
And look, we can all count to six, so most of us anyway.
Give or take.
So look, you're going to go around in this cooperative party. You're going to be generally just exploring as much and as quickly as you can and revealing items. You're going to be revealing events cards, and you're certainly going to be revealing omens. You will go out and you will adventure the buildings, you will adventure the streets, and you'll adventure the catacombs. Now, at some point during this, someone's going to roll enough dice to trigger the haunt. Now, the haunt is where, depending on the person that's actually started and rolled the haunt and the tile in which they're on, that will trigger what scenario you play. And in this game, it comes with 50 scenarios. So in that, replayability is fantastic. Yep. And again, in the admittedly quite simple rulebook and quite thin rulebook, it says, if you reveal one and you've all played it before, doesn't really matter. Just play a different one.
Yes.
Yeah. And it openly says, we don't really care. Just go out there and have fun.
Yeah.
And in a game that lasts an hour, you should all be having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the game shifts. Now, I think also this is where the game shifts from being an easy introduction for newer gamers into, oh my God, what if we've invited this new player to the table? And they're the person who becomes the one versus many. How is that person going to feel? Because it's really quite extreme in that as soon as a haunt is revealed, that player who is randomly selected by this table that says, well, if it was William the Wizard who discovered the haunt on the blood-curdling murder tile, that's the person who's going to be the evil person. They have to go into a separate room. They have to read the scenario. They have to then understand completely what they have to do to win.
Yeah, because they can't ask questions because they're the only ones that know those rules.
Yeah, and folks, there is 50 different haunts. And as we said before, some of the things in this design of this game, some are they're a little bit lazy.
Yeah.
And also 50 different things, that's going to be it's going to be impossible to balance. Some of them are not going to be balanced.
Correct.
I remember last BorderCon, we played the normal version of this, the Betrayal at House on the Hill. Four people had all played it before. A haunt kicked in. It was two of us. We were supposed to be evil twins.
Okay.
All of us had played it multiple times. We went away.
You and Richard, was it?
No. Richard was playing, but it wasn't us. We went away, me and this other guy, I don't know who it was, and we looked at it. We both read it, and we both turned to each other and said, I don't think either A, this is possible, or B, I do not get what this means. Mm. We went back to the table, we told the rest of the guys, and they went, yeah, I don't, this makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah. So we just said, we're going to flip to the next page, flip a coin out of who's the haunter, out of me and him, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and historically, the rule book was from the haunt onwards was terrible, particularly in the first edition. Then they released the second edition, and apparently it didn't get much better.
No, but really.
I mean, and because for a lot of people, they were waiting a long time for that re-release.
Yeah.
Before that, you know, copies of this game were going for like $200, $250 on eBay, the first edition.
This is a game about the fun. It's about the theme. It's about the kind of enjoying stuff, the easiness with friends. If you go into this going being really pedantic about the rules, actually just don't even play it because you won't enjoy it.
But I love the fact that the rulebook says, well, if you are walking through a red door and it says to put another building tile, but you've run out, just put a road there. We don't really care. It's just because it really is just to focus all on fun now.
Yeah.
By all accounts, and again, I've not played the original version. I've not played Betrayal on the House of the Hill and whatever, but so far I've played this maybe three or four times, and not once has there been rules confusion after the haunt.
Yeah, I can say the way we just explained it then that might pull people off saying, like, oh, this happens all the time. It doesn't, but just be prepared for a bit of jankiness in the rules. It's still absolutely worth having and buying. Spoilers for 10 minutes when we say this. But, yeah.
And that's right. The first edition, it was worse, and this still had a massive cult following, and people could not wait for the re-release of the second edition. I'm not going to say any more until a bit later.
All right. So it is quick. It is fun. It is certainly in keeping with the D&D theme. Now, it must be said, we should probably switch this into the review component of our little chat now because we're a few minutes into this. I'm going to start with the component question. What do we think about it? What do we think? It comes with 6 pre-painted minis.
Yes.
It comes with your individual player boards. Now, by all accounts, they were a bit iffy in the original version in terms of connecting your little plastic bits and pieces that if someone in the next room sneezed, that'd all fall off and it'd become redundant.
Yep.
And then you've obviously got the cardstock.
Yep.
Who wants to go first?
I shall go first. So the minis, pre-painted minis, good job for pre-painted minis. Any game that's got minis that is like less than 10, make them pre-painted, please, because it's not that hard. This game has done it, and the price of this game is not that difficult.
No.
So that's good. The clips, as somebody that hated the ones in the previous game, I think they're the most infamous gaming component
reviled.
Ever.
Reviled.
The little clips that would just fall off everywhere and you just couldn't... The clips in this game actually work.
They do.
You put them on, you keep them on those characters, don't take them off because they are quite... If you take them off...
They're actually quite hard to move.
Yes, exactly. If you take them off and try to put them back on, it might be... Yeah. So once you've got the four on there, leave them on there and just move them up and down as you please. They are good. Now, the cards themselves that actually show the different locations you're going to... I mentioned this a few times as we played, which I thought was interesting, that during the original game, it was... Most rooms were very similar because they were a bit dark and danky. I mean, it's a haunted mansion. The rooms are going to look kind of similar.
Yeah.
So they looked a bit beige and a bit kind of... So a lot of them were hard to differentiate because they looked very similar, similar colour. Whereas in this version of the game, everything is very colourful, especially the tavern you start off with. There's heaps of stuff going on. There's heaps of detail, heaps of colour, heaps of everything else. But because of that, because of having so much colour and depth and everything... It also kind of makes it hard to differentiate everything because it's all kind of one big blur of colour. They've gone the polar opposite of where they were previously.
Yep.
It's not a game breaker per se, but it is a little bit, it's a little bit much in places.
Yeah, and I think it's quite funny though. You've got three colours of doors. You've got red and yellow and blue. Mm. But sometimes it's actually quite hard to differentiate the colour of the red and the yellow ones.
Yes.
Yeah. And then thematically it also doesn't make sense that you're walking through a yellow door and the tile you reveal, it might have a yellow or a blue door or something else on there, which is just a bit odd.
Yeah.
But anyway, I like the walking through the door will determine what you reveal. I think it looks great. If a completed map of Baldur's Gate, I think, looks really quite good on the table.
Yeah. Now, for me, I do remember that the original Betrayal had painted minis where, you know, they were, you know, Biff the high school footballer and the cheerleader and the scientist. For me... Wizards of the Coast, they produced a whole line of painted minis, which were really good. They seemed to take the six crappiest ones and put them in this game. So in terms of what Wizards of the Coast can produce, if you look at like your X-Wing with Fantasy Flight, they have made minimal effort. Maybe there's some leftover
ones.
Compare.
Well, if there's an X-Wing in your version of Baldur's Gate, send it back, I must say.
And look, to me it comes down to with this game... The original game, the theme fitted the game, fitted the mechanics. You're wandering through a haunted house. Haunts happen, and your haunts were all your B-movie tropes of horror movies. I love that. The rules, yes, were quite janky. Whereas in this, there's no reason to wander the streets and have a haunt, which could be a quest. I like that this one plays faster.
Yep.
I like that the clips are better. I like they've cleaned up the rules a bit, but I just think there was no need to have this game make a better version of the haunted house one.
But I think they could have just fixed that with a little bit of a story beat, as in they said, like, you're a group of mercenaries, you've just got to this town, it's late at night, you're just basically bumming around until the morning when the new jobs get put on the notice board. And that alone, you could go, okay, so that's why we're exploring this town.
Yep.
And that's why random stuff's just going to happen. But they don't say that. They just kind of plunk you in the pub and go, move around and be like, why?
Well, that's the thing. The story starts two-thirds of the way through the game.
Yeah, yeah. And I will give it to them. There are apparently a lot more fully co-op scenarios in this, whereas in the first game, there may have only been one that was fully co-op. In this one, there's quite a few, apparently, which makes sense as you're a party of adventurers.
We already came across one of them.
Yeah. Exactly. The very first time we played, we had to find some dragon eggs and give them dragon eggs to a dragon for some reason.
I just don't think there's not enough D&D in this to make D&D fans be enamoured with us, and the theme fits so well to the original game, why mess with it?
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, I think they want to mess with it because they know D&D will sell. Now, the thing is about this game, it must be said it hasn't set the world on fire. Mm. You compare it to Betrayal on the House of Some Hill, which is ranked about 200-odd in BGA, BGG, sorry. This version is ranked 2,500.
Okay.
Now, it was everywhere in all the retailers at PAX Australia.
Yes.
They all had mountains of this game, and they would have been on sale for around $60 to $70.
Good price.
Which is a good price for a really new game.
Yeah.
It was sitting next to stacks and stacks of Seafall, which I think they'd tried to sell and were finally going, just take a copy, please. Now, I do like this game because for what you get in an hour of game time is a lot. Yeah. You get a lot of exploration, you get a fair few items, you get that cooperative nature of it, and then you also get the tilt or the haunt or the whatever it is that you want to call it three quarters of the way through. Now, it must be said, the problem I've found is that unless you're playing it with five or six, the haunt doesn't last very long, and in every single situation, whoever the poor bastard is who is the evil player just gets screwed over and is nowhere near winning.
Oh, really? Played it four times now, and it was a four times easy victory for the good guys. Like, didn't even break a sweat. I was the bad guy in one of them, and I was like, okay, this is what I've got to do. I've got to kill them, which takes a long time because combat does take quite a bit of time and whatever else. I need to hunt them down first and kill them. What they had to do was something that I didn't know at the time, was like do one or two things. But the, because those tiles were already on the board, like two turns in, they were like, we've just won. Like, what?
Exactly.
You did, excuse you?
And that's the nature of this, is that the joy of a random tile placement game and not knowing what the scenario is going to be until you actually trigger it is exactly that. Because we've had scenarios where if we hadn't explored as much as we did, it would be a very different game, because a win condition would be take this, whatever it is, to this particular tile four times.
Yes.
But it just so happened that we'd already revealed and we'd done everything.
I have really definitely quick. Seen that in the Haunted House version, where the haunt came really suddenly.
Yep.
And none of the things you had to find were even on the board. So you're still having to do all that exploring to find them whilst you're running away from the ghost or the demon or the Frankenstein or whatever.
Yeah, just to add to the randomness, I just did make a note, one of the games we played, some of the items that different characters picked up, the elf, who was like a ranger, picked up a giant battle axe. The barbarian picked up a book of spells.
There we go.
And then the halfling picked up a giant horn of blasting and a potion of giant strength.
There you go.
So it made no sense whatsoever. Not and so. Also, I've got a note here that says, too many plague rats.
Yes, there was a rat for everything. Now, let's just slightly switch tack.
Yeah.
Because recently it's been announced by Rob Davio that there will be Betrayal at House on the Haunted Hill Legacy, or as it is eloquently named, Betrayal Legacy.
And I love the sound of this, because going back to the great theme, the B-movie tropes, but the fact that it sounds like you adventure through this haunted house and things are changing as you go in Legacy style, to me, I think that's going to be absolutely awesome. And Rob Davio knows a little bit about the Legacy game. Mm. Basically, he invented it.
Yes. Now, I have had a little bit of Legacy fatigue. I think it's no secret that we have started to really go, oh, let's finish Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Which I'm so glad you guys did when I wasn't around.
We haven't done it yet. And look, Seafall wasn't anything that was good by all accounts, and admittedly we've not played it, but few people have said have this in your library and play it all the time.
We didn't play it because of those accounts.
Correct. And then Season 2 of Pandemic Legacy has been very mixed. So I'm very excited about this, because if you can do a Legacy game that is very rules light, that plays in an hour, I'm all on board for that. And I've not played Betrayal on the House on the Hill anyway, so let me play a Legacy version. But anyway, that's enough. I think it's a good game for the right price. It's quick, it's fun, but you need to play it at maximum player numbers. That's my review of it. Yep.
And I am a big fan of the other one, and I still own the other one. I would still happily own this as well.
Okay, and I would be happy to play the other one. This, I'm happy to give a miss. But
thanks, Let's Play Games, for giving us a copy. We had a lot of fun playing it, and send us some more stuff.
Yeah, good on you.
Well, there you go. That was All Fires the Fire with Always a Riot, which was a Tassie act.
Yeah.
You are with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Now, Garth, before we go on, Betrayal at Baldur's Gate.
Yep.
Obviously, a Forgotten Realms D&D type game. Where can you get all your D&D stuff for Christmas?
Area 52.
Area 52. They've got a massive range of, you know, your D&D and your other role-playing type books, if there are any role-playing
Pathfinder.
Systems.
Pathfinder. I'd be lucky if they had Starfinder. I don't think they'll have that one.
Not
they'll have.
Yet.
Is it The Edge of the Empire? What's the Star Wars RPG one?
Yeah, look, they've got those three,
and that's pretty much all you need.
Yeah, correct. All right, now.
Leon.
Hello.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
Or as they say in Japanese, welcome home.
It's an interesting American accent.
That was horrible. So,
yes, I left.
How dare you leave us? Because the poor listeners have had to listen to Mark and I prattle on for at least the last couple of weeks without the youth of the show on a youth station.
Which is, I know. I mean, they're kind of lucky at all, because I think it was a Monday I messaged you guys saying, you're going to put the episode up, you know what? And you're like, oh, yeah, we should probably do that. While the editor's away, then
and we did.
The old fellas will do nothing.
Yeah, we got them up. Don't you worry. Yes. They're held together by sticks and barbed wire and what's that grey stuff?
Sticky tape.
You. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, that was a brilliant joke. Come on now.
That's good. All right. Now, you had the nerve to go to Japan.
I did. Something I've wanted to do my entire life.
Correct. You certainly fit the bill of someone who looks like they should go to Japan. How was it?
It was amazing.
All right, cool. So what are we going to talk about next?
Yes, no, it was absolutely brilliant. It was everything that I wanted to be and more. Every single person we met over there was polite and lovely, which is not what I can say about some of the other countries I visited.
Including Tasmania.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it was an absolute blast. And we were in Tokyo, then we went to Kyoto, then we went to Osaka.
Yep.
Osaka at the end was a bit... It was fine, but it didn't do anything that the other two cities didn't do better. So the first half of our trip in Kyoto and then Tokyo at the start was, brilliant.
Yeah, okay.
And what was the main reason you went again?
There really wasn't one, other than the fact
Men in Tights, wasn't it? Really was about Men in Tights.
Yes. I went to see New Japan Pro Wrestling because I'm a humongous wrestling fan. So in Osaka, one of the last nights we were there, we went to see New Japan. They've got the World Tag League going on at the moment, which means nothing to most people that are listening to this.
Exactly. But I played tag in school.
I got to see, I got to see all the big names from, Kazuchika Okada to Tetsuya Naito.
No way!
Whoa!
Yes, who were just, mind you though, the audience, 50%, if not more, women.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They were mad for it. Yeah.
Right. Excellent. And predominantly Japanese locals, I dare say.
Oh, yeah. We were... Well, I thought I would see some more white folk, or gaijin, as they call them, over there. But when we went to see the wrestling especially, I think Sarah and I were the only two there.
Which you had to go to quite a bit of length to actually get those tickets in the first place, which involved a random Japanese person found on the internet.
No. They were an American
that
lived in Japan that happened to like a similar Facebook page that I, from a wrestling podcast that I'm a fan of.
Yep.
I met him through like a message saying like, does anyone ever booked Japan wrestling tickets? And he's just like, yeah, I live there. I'll give you a hand. And I was like, okay. A few messages later, he'd done it for me. So I'm going to send him a nice care package very soon.
Did you see the other Men in Tights, the very, very large Men in Tights?
No, sadly, they were in the other end of the country.
Oh, no.
Yes, there was the one thing we didn't do, which everyone wants to do, which, going to see the sumo.
Well, it only happens, I think, four times a year. Yeah. They have four sumo sort of festivals or competitions that go for a couple of weeks each.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that if you're not there at the right time and you haven't booked in advance, you won't be able to see those man nappies.
They were in Hiroshima at the same time that we were in Osaka, I believe.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know now, I would have probably rather gone there to see them, but that's fine.
And so what were some of your other highlights? Because for anyone who knows you and is friends with you on Facebook, you were posting billions of photos.
Yes, we took quite a bit of a photo journal while we were over there because, my memory's not the best, so it is starting to go, so I do need to have these pictures. There are lots of different things. Like, there was heaps of the arcades over there that were just put all the ones here to absolute shame. There was some amazing stuff. There was actually one in there that I did want to talk about. It's called Lords of Vermilion. Mm-hmm. What it is that it's an arcade game, but you play it with cards, like a Magic the Gathering style cards that you actually put on this screen.
Ah.
And the way you play the game is by putting the cards down. They obviously have some sort of chip in them or something that gets read, and you move them around like a grid. And then on the screen, there was a few different ones, but Vermilion's the one I remembered. There was another one that was a Japanese name that I can't pronounce, I'm afraid. One of them was like a 4-on-4 battle type thing, whereas another one was you were playing as armies, almost like a Warhammer type thing, and each card represented a unit in the army.
Okay. And
you
were moving Summoner Wars?
Yeah, kind of like that. And you were moving it around the field, and on the actual screen, it was then moving those units around. It looked awesome. I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
None whatsoever. I was too busy playing the dancing and rhythm games.
The cards might have the same technology as the Drop Mix game we saw at PAX.
It probably has something like
that. Where they have some sort of magic stuff that happens.
So we actually did... We actually,
such insightful news there, Mark.
We did so much that it is all kind of a blur.
I know the one thing you couldn't take photos of, or one of the things, Studio
Ghibli?
Ghibli?
Yes, or Ghibli, however you want to pronounce it. So the Japanese version of Disney, who have some of the best films ever made.
Yeah.
So we went to see that, and yes, sadly we couldn't take any photos on the inside, but that was an amazing place. It was only just like a big, like a mansion, essentially, that had some stuff on there. You also got to see the Japanese-only short film of Totoro 2.
Totoro,
so the sequel to Totoro,
yep.
Which is pretty cool. But probably the best thing that we did was driving around the streets of Tokyo dressed as Mario characters.
Oh, really?
In go-karts. It was amazing. Yeah. We were a bit hesitant at first because people think, oh, the traffic over there is going to be so bad and it's going to be... But the funny thing is, the traffic over there is brilliant because they've worked out this system where they just make all the lights go for a bit longer. So the reds are all longer, the greens are all longer. And because of that, the traffic in front of you clears once you get a clear go. Once you get a green light, you've got a green light for 20 minutes.
Well, and everyone knows in Japan, you see Mario coming down the road, you know he's going to throw a bomb at you, you get out of the way.
Exactly. So I there was another couple with us who were an Asian couple, but they were from Melbourne, as you do. The amount of Australians we bloody ran into over there. Anytime there was all you can drink, there'd be several Australians.
Oh, really? Who would have thunk?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they were dressed as Mario and Luigi, and the wife and I were dressed. I was Bowser, as you do, or King Koopa over there.
So that's good.
Thank you very much. And she was going to be Peach, but she didn't like the look of the dress. She went as Yoshi instead.
Well, there you go.
And so on the go-karts, we had to get an international driver's license before we left.
Wow.
So we had to fill out some paperwork and pay some money to get it to do this, but it was. It was absolutely amazing. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
I find it amazing because there's no way you'd be allowed to do that in Australia.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
Well, we went over Rainbow Bridge, which is amazing, dressed as Mario characters, and which is equivalent of like their highway. So we were doing 50, 60 Ks on their highway, and there were trucks.
In a go-kart. Dressed
as
Mario.
From banana skins.
Yes. And there were trucks and vans and everything beside us and going around us, and you'd think it'd be, this is going to be hard, but no, it was completely fine.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, it was so good. So, yes, Japan gets my thumbs up of approval.
And the what's it called? The bullet train?
That's the Shinkansen.
Shinkansen, that's right.
Yes, they are. It's just one of those things that you're on it and you don't even know that you're on it. You don't even know you're moving until you look out the window and go, oh, look, there's Mount Fuji. Oh, it's gone. Yeah. It is,
I didn't remember the world being so blurry.
Yeah, because we spent our final days in Osaka and then we had a flight out from Tokyo that night. So we're like, it's half a country away. It's like, no, it's going to jump on a train, mate.
Wow.
And we'll be there in an hour. And they actually, one of our tour guides, when we went on a tour to Mount Fuji, was telling us about a new train system they're working on, which is, it's was four times faster than the bullet train?
Is this like really? The maglev or something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, it'd have to be like that maglev technology.
It's like, it's like 40 minutes to go across the whole country.
Wow.
Which is just, I don't
know.
Now,
more importantly, Leon.
Yes.
Do you play any games?
No.
Do you buy any games?
I bought a Nintendo Switch when I got back, which we were playing in the pub before we came in.
So we saw a photo of you in a game store.
It was basically a department store, so the equivalent of a Meijer here. And I just saw the word game and went, ooh. Because I must admit, I didn't actually look out for any board game stores, which is kind of, as a dice man, is pretty sad.
Yes.
But because I thought, I'm not going to be able to buy anything, so why bother?
Well, and you might want to buy gifts for people.
Oh, yeah, that's right, you too. So the photo I posted where there was like Catan and Scotland Yard and then Carcassonne, I think it was.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they were like, that was it. That was the selection, and that was in the basement of this Meijer-type building.
Well, there you go. Sounds like you had a hell of a good time.
Indeed. I'm still jet-lagged as hell.
Yes. I think what we should do is probably, before we go to a break, we'll just go, would you like to win a subscription for 1 year to the Campaigner magazine?
Oh, yeah.
But, Garth, how would I achieve this?
Oh, that's a good question, Leon. I've missed you. Mark never asked me those kind of questions.
You're welcome.
Well, all you need to do, because of our wonderful partnership with the Campaigner magazine, is jump onto the Campaigner magazine website, which is thecampaignermagazine.com.
That's right.
Take a look at the website and see what game is featured on issue 21. Then send us a tweet or a Facebook message, is that right,
yes,
Leon?
Yes, message.
Email to dicemencometh@gmail.com and just simply tell us what game is featured. You've only got about a week left. We are going to be finishing this up. Now, because of the way this scheduling works, how about we call it the 14th of December is the last day to enter, which is a week from today's show.
Yep.
So we're going to get this episode out hopefully pretty early on in the weekend.
Yep.
So that you've got a few days to listen, a few days to get your last entries in, and then we'll draw it on next week's show. Once again, jump onto the Campaigner Magazine website, tell us what game is featured on issue 21, email us at dicemencometh@gmail.com, tweet us, Facebook message us, something us so that we know we've got your entry.
Yeah, and even if, you know, if you want to do that or not, just buy the magazine while you're there, because they have all the back issues and they're all a good read, and why not?
Exactly. So we're going to throw to a song before Mark regales us with his Christmas gift guide. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Well, that was Tassie Act, King Carousel, with Let Me Go. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, there is only one large, grey-haired, jolly man that we're concerned about. Over to you, Mark.
It's that time of year when everyone asks me when I'm going to put the red suit on, and I just say, go away, you funny young fellow.
I'm sure that's exactly the terminology.
That's right. But, look, it's that time. It's time to give gifts, whatever you celebrate. And look, here's the thing. I was racing home last night thinking, got to do my preparation for the show. And on the way home, I listened to an awesome podcast, our friends from Canada of Dice and Men. And what did they have? They had a whole show. There was a Christmas gift guide. And first thing I thought was, all right, that's preparation done for me.
Speaking of which, while I was in Japan, oh, do they like Christmas over there?
Oh, yeah, really?
It was everywhere. Like the Disneyland and Universal Studios, everywhere. If I hear Mariah Carey again, I'm going to kill someone.
Well, I might put the Spotify playlist on top.
But then, after the Dice and Men groups did such a great job of their Christmas list, I thought, props to them.
So are we just going to play them? Do you want me to just push this button?
No,
here
what
so
I'm going to say is,
are we just going to steal their idea?
No, no. What I'm going to say is, if you want a really great Christmas gift guide, listen to Of Dice and Men. Mm. But then I thought, you know, there were some little categories they didn't quite cover, people you might be looking for gifts for. So I would prop their list up with a few extras. So think about, you know, you've got those friends who have board game nights.
Yes.
And I say board games in inverted commas. So your friends who have board game nights without any real board games.
Come over and play Connect Four.
Yeah. Or Cards Against Someone.
Yeah, Crabs Against Adjust Humidity.
Yeah, look, what they really need is they need a copy of Time's Up Title Recall.
They do.
Yeah, fair enough.
Or Telestrations The Party Pack.
Yes.
Plays up to 12.
It's the one you need.
Or any version of Code Names. There are so many of them now. We've talked about
except
the words, the pictures, the After Dark, the Disney, the Marvel. I mean, really, look, I'm a purist. I think stick with the words ones. I think it's more challenging than the pictures.
Yeah.
But for some silly people like you, Leon, you
I've
might
converted,
like the pictures
I'm a pictures man now. Yes.
No surprises there.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think for kids, the pictures one is better because you don't have to be able to read.
Hey.
But I personally prefer the words as well. I think it requires you to think a little bit more.
But some adults aren't that good at thinking, remember? So
exactly.
That's why the pictures can come in handy.
We have you around because you're pretty, that's why.
If you haven't seen Leon the Marvel one, did you notice they've got pictures on one side, they've got words on the other side, so you can play both of those versions.
Cleverer.
Now, the presents for the kids. Do you want to get away from the Xbox and the PlayStation?
Or the Switch?
Yeah. Well, firstly, you could get them hooked on something like Hearthstone or Elder Scrolls Legends or even Sentinels of the Multiverse, the app version.
That's true.
With superheroes. But if you want to get them right away from that electronic crack, then throw out a copy of Harry Potter, because everyone loves Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle, the deck-building game.
Oh, was that Hogwarts only the other day?
Well, you and your butterbeer can get out of
and
here.
And I didn't take the roller coaster because the line was 3 hours bloody long.
Right. Or something as simple as...
That butterbeer was good. Sorry, keep going.
Animal upon Animal, the animal wooden animal stacking game. Who can resist to stack a chicken on a crocodile and a pig on a chicken and a monkey on a pig.
That sounds like what my Christmas dinner will be, personally.
is that the turducken or whatever it is?
Yeah, they're definitely. But no, I look, and I also, just really quickly, with the Harry Potter one, I like the fact that you basically unlock extra, extra parts of the
game. That's why
it's almost like that legacy card game where it teaches you the basics. And as you play more, you get more stuff. So for kids, that's great.
And look, speaking of animal upon animal, you know you've all got that relative that spoils their kids, treats them like a little adult, and you hate it. So what you want to give them is something so, so simple, like animal upon animal, or even Jenga, or any other thing that's made of wood, because they probably have never touched a piece of wood in their life.
Wow. That's true. I like a lot of wooden things. My kids love Jenga.
Yes.
And the thing is, you can use it for RPGs now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can use it for horror RPGs.
Yes.
Just paint it black, you're laughing.
Look, also, a present for your parents or your grandparents when you visit them in their retirement village and you notice their friends just aren't quite all there and aren't quite up to the Scrabble they used to, well, you can get them on paperback, awesome word-building deck building game. You can get them on Word Slam. Do you know, you guys know Word Slam?
I don't know much about it apart from the title.
Yeah, I played it at BorderCon, and you have this whole big deck of words, and then you have another little deck, which is the thing you're trying to guess. You play in teams again, so two teams. You're basically trying to get your team member to guess something, and you have a deck of cards with one word. So I might play out yellow boat man coat.
Okay.
What do you think I'd be trying to make you guess with that?
Sailor.
Yellow boatman coat.
Boatman coat.
The Beatles.
A banana.
Life jacket.
A life jacket.
But you use the, you've got this huge deck of just words that are cards that are one word.
Sure.
And you're looking for combos. And you can swap them out and in and out. Yep. It's heaps of fun.
Cool.
So Word Slam, paperback, or even something like Bananagrams, which is just a bit of a change up from your Scrabble.
Scrabble,
that's right.
Okay.
Now, what are you going to give the hot friend of your sister, who's totally as single as you are? You're going to give her any good board game, and don't dare go down the creepy route, okay? Let's keep it clean.
So we're not talking Bruno
no,
Judy's?
No, okay. none of those. Right. If you've got the brother-in-law who likes craft beer and home brewing and they never shut up about it, well, you've got Brewcraft as the card game.
You do. You've or Brewcraft as the actual game.
Yeah, well, if they're really into game. You've got Bang the Card Game or Bang the Dice Game, because
the dice game, the other ones.
You drink beer to bring your health back.
Yep.
Or you've even got something like the Red Dragon Inn, where you're a party of adventurers at the pub after your adventure playing drinking
you've
games.
You've even got the Dragon and Flagon, which is admittedly, for us, not a great game at lower player numbers, but if you tap that out at maybe seven or eight players and you've got this beautiful 3D view of a tavern, it might be fun.
Doubtful.
Might be fun.
Now, if you've got the family who love to fight.
Yeah.
Okay, we all know some families who just spend the whole of Christmas
fighting. You don't know my family, Mark. You don't know my family.
Oh, you would say that about his family.
Exactly.
Get him a great co-op. I mean, Garth. Get him Pandemic or one of the Forbidden Island or deserts.
Yeah.
I mean, Hanabi, that doesn't cause many fights.
No.
Even Mysterium or Magic Maze. There are so many great co-op games.
What about Dixit to calm them down? Nice looking art. So Mysterium's all well and good, except for a frustrated ghost.
Yes.
Which I could just imagine some grandparent just like... Rah, rah, rah.
Well, one too many Christmas bourbons.
Yes. Could be definitely a two-edged sword. And look, your friends who think that the only card game out there worth playing is poker, you've got something like Dice Town with its poker dice and its fancy cards and its cowboy theme. You've got Wits and Wagers where you're combining trivia and gambling. Mm. And you've even got, I love this idea, Sheriff of Nottingham, because you don't need any of the stupid suits on the cards. You've got all the bluffing there.
Yeah.
Or to take it purer still, Skull, that bluffing game Skull, which is, you know, it's like poker without the cards. I love that. And look, one more thing. If you've got the sports nut or the car nut, well, you've got Doshboard Golf. You've got Mars Open, the new on-the-table golfing game.
Correct.
And you've got Thunder Alley, Formula D, Pitch Car. if you're even into
test match, like
extreme sports.
What's that cycling one you played at?
Flam Rouge,
which is awesome.
Yeah.
Or if you're into extreme sports, you've got K2.
I know.
Mm. There are so many amazing board games out there that you can buy for Christmas. So there's a few different ideas for your family and friends who aren't quite in the normal gift buying categories. I'm sure many of those things you could find at Area 52, and well, they would have some great ideas as well.
And with the launch of Amazon in Australia, you should still go to a game shop because they don't really have anything of note for a board gamer.
Oh, not just board gamers, just in general. It's absolutely rubbish.
I don't think Amazon's going to go anywhere.
Now, I wanted to do the Secret Santa thingy.
Yeah.
Right.
But guess what?
What?
As usual, we have run out of time. But
I think I said that an hour ago.
It's not Christmas next week.
No.
You've still got time to buy me something.
Oh, I'll think
so,
about it.
So let's carry that one over to next week, and we can do a little bit more research maybe, so it's less than half-assed.
Excellent. Well, I've already written down my ones, but I'll come up with even better ones.
Save them for next week, Garth.
Okay.
So, look, that's us for the week. Thank you so much again to Area 52 for your support. As we said, there is so many great things you can get for Christmas. Last year, I bought my young niece and nephew Ticket to Ride, My First Journey, which is like the kiddie version of Ticket to Ride. It's beautiful. I think it was $60 or something like that.
And it was one of the Board Games Australia nominees for Child's Game of the Year.
There you go.
Hooray.
But apart from that, I think we're off.
We are. So we've got to go and play Gloomhaven! So we're going to get out of here. Thanks so much for listening to episode 193. Please remember to get your entries in for the Campaigner Magazine competition because you've only got a week or from the time you listen to this until the 14th of December. So get in there. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM and we will see you again next week.
Arigato gozaimasu.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart or online at area52.com.au and find us online at thedicemencometh.com.